Two area Democrats hope to win their party's nomination in the race to replace Naomi Jacobson as Champaign-Urbana state representative in Springfield. In a poll taken late last month, Carol Ammons and Sam Rosenberg were within 3 percentage points of each other. That's well within the margin of error. Nearly half of those polled remained undecided. 2 weeks ahead of the primary election, a conversation with the candidates for Illinois' 103rd state legislative district. Last week, Republican Kristen Williamson. Today, the Democrats. Sam Rosenberg and Carol Ammons join us. If you have a question for the candidates, you can call now, 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. It's Focus coming up after this news. And good morning. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Scott Cameron, sitting in for Jim Meadows. Today we're joined by the two Democratic candidates hoping to fill the void left by State Representative Naomi Jacobson. She's decided not to run for a seventh term in the 103rd District. That covers most of Champaign and Urbana. Running in the primary, Carol Ammons. She serves on the Urbana City Council, and Sam Rosenberg, currently an attorney working in Champaign. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Focus. And if you have a question for Sam Rosenberg or Carol Ammons about the issues affecting Champaign-Urbana, the state in general, about the campaign, give us a call. That number is 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. You can also reach us by email. That address is will-talk@illinois.edu. And we're also on Twitter. Tweet us there at Focus580. We talked a little bit here before we went on the air, just, you know, we've done debates and forums that can be very formal. I'm hoping this is a little less formal, that we can, you know, learn as much as we can about each of you, where you stand on some of the issues, more of a conversation than a formal debate. To that end, I don't have a timer here. Nobody's running, so we'll try to keep things as fair as we can, but, you know, through a process of talking and going back and forth. We did flip a coin before the program here to decide who gets the first question. The first question will go to Sam Rosenberg here, and after that we'll take turns with who responds first on each of the subsequent questions. And Sam, I'll also say I'm having trouble seeing you with the microphone here. I wonder if we can try moving just the slide a little bit over that way, and then we can at least see each other.
There you go.
Here in the studio. There you go. No, I agree. All right, you know, why don't we go ahead and start off with an email that came in, and this is from Stephanie Sewell, it looks like. I believe probably the same Stephanie with the Graduate Employee Union. And she says, question for both candidates, how specifically will you promote job growth in our district? And Sam, we'll start with you.
Sure. With regards to job growth, I think we need to make sure that any incentive structures that are set up are ones that are promoting jobs that, so for example, a situation where we are putting forward incentives to build a new factory in Champaign-Urbana. We need to make sure that any incentives, whether they be TIF, whether they be prevailing wage, things like that, that they're coming after the project is completed and the job targets have been met. Additionally, we need to be reaching out to not only companies that already exist in this region, but also throughout the state and throughout the country. Existing programs have been doing great things, whether they be in Champaign or Urbana, whether they be on campus with regards to the research park. But frequently, I think we see job incentive programs either taking resources from already existing situations, or we see them not following through. And that's a big concern, because if we are simply robbing Peter to pay Paul in an attempt to create more jobs, the net gain is negligible. If we are making sure that incentives are tied to actual job growth, if we are making sure that incentives are tied to long-term progress for this community, that takes a bigger picture approach and I think can be tremendously beneficial to Champaign-Urbana in the long run.
And Carol?
I think it's a great question. Certainly, I believe that those tax incentives absolutely have to be tied to job creation. Many of the things that I've done in the past several years have really focused on job creation. I'll give you an example of that. As a former county board member, one of the first resolutions I was able to vote on was a high-speed rail resolution for this area, which is not just dealing with the issue of job creation, but also transportation and connecting us to the our upstate in Chicago and St. Louis areas. Job creation has to also go beyond just corporations, though. I'm really focused on incentivizing small businesses in the same way that we incentivize large businesses to support their growth and to support them once they're there. In Urbana, we have a growing small business economy that I've been able to work with over the last several years to make sure as a citizen and now as a council member that those businesses survive. I frequent the businesses in my community so that they will survive. As I look at job growth, I'm looking at making sure that we change our poverty rate in Champaign County. Our poverty rate is 24.5% currently, making us the third in all of the counties in Illinois with the highest poverty rate. That's a problem. I want our workers to earn a living wage, and I want living wage jobs created in Champaign County, and that's what I'll be working on through for the 103rd District and for our county as a whole.
Okay. Let's come back here to issues of education. The costs continue to climb, particularly for college. State funding for higher education is not what it used to be. If a college degree remains if not the primary path to a good paying job, how do you keep that path open to those who can't afford to graduate with tens of thousands of dollars in debt? And this question goes first to Carol.
I've had some personal experience with that. You know, for me, I'm looking at the 280,000 students in Illinois that are currently eligible for MAP grants, but only half of those students even get them, just about 144,000. I didn't qualify for a MAP grant when I was younger, but I know what it will do for the lives of young people today if we fund our educational institutions properly. But we have to do a couple of things in the 103rd District. We have to fund K-12 properly. We have to make sure that the resources are in the classroom so that students in the 103rd District have a real option to go to the University of Illinois and to Parkland College. But by doing that, we also have to look at those who may not go to the higher education institutions. We have to look at those who need job training and technical skill training, which right now we don't have a good tech school here in the 103rd District. That's something that I've been working on as a council member to get a tech school to locate here in our district. The reason why is because we do have Research Park. And what I learned at council last night is that we have a lot of jobs here in our community, but we don't have the workforce that meets and matches those jobs. So my goal is to make sure that we get a training institution here that deals with the technical side, infusing our connection to the University of Illinois, providing MAP grant funding for our state so that students who don't have access can get it. If they choose to go here, we want them to have no excuse and give them that opportunity to go here. Those are the areas that if we tie them together properly, I think we can make a real change and a real dent in the poverty level here in Champaign County.
And Sam Rosenberg, education, how do you...
Sure. The question, I believe, was regarding debt for college students.
It was, with the cost of college education going up.
Right.
How do you ensure that path to, you know, a good paying job remains open for those who can't afford to graduate with tons of debt?
Sure. And I think this comes down to a simple prioritization of what is important in the state of Illinois. In the same exact week that the state passed its pension reform bill, Senate Bill 1, it was offering tax incentives to Archer Daniels Midland to stay in Decatur. I think that is a perfect example of how the state is putting the future of education on the line in conjunction with trying to get companies to stay here. I mentioned Senate Bill 1 because the bottom line is if we are going to be continually eroding the amount of pension reform the amount of pension security that is provided to those who are teaching and working within our educational institutions, what kind of people are we going to be attracting to higher education to teach and to work and to even study at those institutions? I think what it really comes down to, and I mentioned the priority situation, is that we as a state need to put education first and foremost. Since day one of this campaign, I've said that my top two priorities are jobs and education. With regards to college debt, we as a state need to re-examine what we are. If our main flagship land-grant university cannot serve the citizens of the state without shouldering them with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt, and that's really inexcusable. And there are statutory ways to make sure that the University of Illinois can become more successful with regards to the funds it brings in and additionally lower the tuition rate. It is now more expensive for a student to go in-state to the University of Illinois than it is to go out-of-state to Iowa. And as far as I'm concerned, the priority of the University of Illinois should be to educate the citizens of Illinois.
Can I follow up on just a sentence I wanted to add to?
Yeah.
It's interesting because the student debt issue, and I have a student currently in college with student debt,
mm-hmm.
that law also needs to be addressed federally.
And which law are you talking
meaning
about?
Meaning the student debt law, meaning okay. the federal government really needs to lower the interest rate. That is too high for students to be able to maintain. They know that a majority of the students who graduate will come out with a level of debt that they cannot afford to have, can't buy a car, and can't buy a home. So you ruin the credit of the student before they even start their lives. That is where the rewriting of the law needs to take place. But we also need regulations to protect us from predatory educational lending institutions that are out there. And some of us have been victims from those. And we have to protect ourselves and our students from those predatory lending institutions. And in Springfield, we need to do that by state law, but they also need to do it federally.
Okay. Sam, did you want to, anything you wanted to add to that?
Predatory lending and credit problems are pervasive throughout our society. And it does hurt students, especially when they are starting behind the eight ball with regards to the amount of debt they're incurring from college. That is where the state government does need to step in and make sure that our universities are well-funded and that in this day and age when state support for universities, state universities, is going down, there either needs to be an alternative mechanism in which the university can raise money or the state does need to pony up and make sure that the universities are well-funded from start to finish.
And I wonder, you know, you mentioned funding and making sure that the universities are well-funded and even reducing the cost of tuition. Carol Ammons, as you mentioned, training institutions getting technical training institutions here mm-hmm. In the area. How do you pay for this at a time when the state budget is in a large amount of debt, running deficits repeatedly? This sounds like a new question. Why don't we go back? Sam, we'll start with you.
Sure. I find it interesting that when people ask that question, they say, well, do we need to cut services and cut wasteful spending, or do we need to raise taxes on some? And the answer is yes, because it's really a twofold solution that needs to take place. I do believe that there is wasteful spending in the Illinois budget and that we need to go through this line by line and see once again where our priorities are and if education and job creation are going to be at the tops of those lists. So I think there's that aspect. Additionally, I have come out very much in favor of a progressive income tax, which would bring in more income for the state coffers to go towards education. Locally, I am in favor of a casino in Danville. I think that would be beneficial both for job creation and for local education funding. And you are exactly right. This is something that is going to require a significant amount of creativity when it comes to bringing in the revenue to support education. Continually cutting the pension benefits and the salaries of our true public servants, our teachers, our firemen, our policemen, is not going to solve the problems. What is going to is bringing in more revenue, and we can do that through, say, there are certain statutory restrictions right now that the University of Illinois has imposed upon them by Springfield that prevents them from making a certain amount of money off of their research. Things like that that can be changed. Additionally, you look at other public universities throughout the country that have much more efficient processes, whether it be through their administration, whether it be through enrollment, whether it be through procurement, that best case scenario can be applied here at the University of Illinois and result in significant savings.
And Carol, same question. How do you pay for these things?
I think we certainly need to restructure all of our taxing systems in Illinois, not just the personal tax, but the corporate tax, the motor fuel tax, all of the taxes that maintain services for our citizens. We need to look at that first. I believe the progressive income tax is one way. We also need to look at our collar states that are around us and look at other revenue sources that they're generating in the service industry. That may be another way to generate revenue in the state. But we also need to look at really seriously wasteful spending, not on human services, because we have to keep police service, fire service, services for homeless people, for veteran services, those things we have to keep. We have to keep those for our citizens. But we can look at other ways and commissions and things that we spend a lot of money on that may not be serving the purposes that they were intended when they were first established. I remember just being on the county board in a very difficult period for the county in 2008 with all other communities across this country who suffered from the fiscal fallout, of course, from Washington, D.C. and the banking situation. We had to sit down with ASME, which is the union of the county, and say, listen, the county is in trouble. We're not wastefully spending money. We're being good stewards of the money of the county, but we are required to have to either cut staff or we may have to come up with a furlough plan. ASME's leadership sat with us. We came to terms so that we could have a furlough plan that met the needs but kept all of our employees. I think the state is going to have to do some of these, you know, roll your sleeve up kind of processes and open that budget up so people understand it and look at where cuts can be made, where savings can be had. But we cannot sacrifice the much needed services of the state that provide safety nets for our citizens.
All right.
Scott, can I add a little bit?
Please, go ahead.
One of the things I also think we need to be looking at is to make sure that legislators understand the deep cuts that may be necessary to get our state out of this fiscal hole. And that may mean tying legislator salary to the median income here in Illinois. If that might mean that if the budget for a county or a state organization goes down, the salaries for those associated with that organization, the legislators themselves, feel that burden. And that's something that I think would change the perspective that currently exists in Springfield if individuals who were serving there felt the impact of the cuts that they make.
Carol, a follow-up on that?
Well, I find it to be interesting that we're talking about making sacrifices. In this campaign, as you know, if you've been to my website, people can go there, carolammonsforstaterep.com. If you go to my website, you'll see that there's a list of completely volunteers from this community who are working on this campaign. I don't have big financing. I don't have money that is, you know, flowing out of our coffers to run this very grassroots, very people's campaign. The sacrifice that I've made is evident in how my campaign is running. And so if there's going to be cuts, of all people are willing to make them, it's certainly me. And I've seen I've been willing to cut at the county level, at the city level, and certainly I will absolutely be willing to cut at the state level. I understand that if we're in a fiscal crisis, as I run my household, if I don't have enough money to pay for my son to go to these lessons, I have to make sure that he has a home to live in. And that's the most important thing that I'll be doing in Springfield. I won't focus on the people with all the money. I'll focus on the people who really need a hand up and not a handout.
All right. One more chance to a quick follow up on that. There were a lot of things raised there. Sam, do you want to respond to any of that?
I'm just going to simply say that I'm receiving support from a large variety of individuals from all across the state. Many folks are getting excited about my campaign, regardless of where they are in Illinois and regardless of where they are in the 103rd district.
Okay. Yeah, let's go ahead and move on. We're talking with Carol Ammons and Sam Rosenberg, the two Democratic candidates for state representative in the 103rd district. If you have a question for them about the issues here in the campaign, some of the other things going on in the state, 800-222-9455. Excuse me. Will-talk at illinois.edu is the email address. Also, you can tweet us at Focus580. And let's see. Why don't we go to line three? Let's bring in a caller now. John from Urbana, thanks for calling in. You're on Focus.
Thank you. I appreciate the high level of discourse by both candidates. My question is, you know, we got into this pension mess, this budget mess, and the shortage of the University of Illinois because, you know, during the last 12 years of Naomi Jacobson's representation, and she made the same mistake over and over, and that was she voted for the same Speaker of the House. Can any of you address whether or not this General Assembly needs to restructure the rules of the game that the Speaker of the House has control over the bills, has control over the legislation, whether it goes to committee, and how would whether or not, and really it comes down to, would you vote for the current Speaker of the House that's been there for 30 years? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
All right, John, thanks for the call. Thanks for the question. If my notes are correct, Carol, this one comes to you first.
I appreciate the caller's question. The short answer is the Speaker of the House has been the Speaker for, I think, about 30 years. And the state of Illinois is in real trouble. If there is a person who is positioned and ready to take the leadership of the state to the next level, certainly I would consider voting for a new Speaker of the House. At this point, I don't know who's prepared to do what, but I do agree with the caller that the problem is a structural problem in Springfield. If it is difficult for all of its members who represent all of the districts in Illinois to bring forward a bill or proposition to the floor for debate, simply for discussion, if there's a barrier for that, and that barrier is the power and control of the speaker, then I think that that has to be reshaped and reworked so that the voice of the people from whatever district that is have a true opportunity to participate in governance and bringing state priorities to the floor. That's something that really needs to be done, but it needs to be focused structurally. I understand that the speaker has brought forward a bill, unfortunately, on the pensions that are currently in the courts. That bill, unfortunately, I believe it to be unconstitutional. Certainly my legal friend here can help us with that. But I do believe that that bill is unconstitutional. It seems pretty straightforward to me when you read the language that's been put in. But the speaker deliberately put forward a bill that would be ruled unconstitutional and has to go to court, wasting taxpayer money and wasting the resources of those who have already worked for them. That is a problem, and that is structurally has to be addressed. And I believe that if elected, I will be seeking certainly an audience with the speaker, asking him to restructure and make open the process of transparent government in Springfield and bring democratic principles to the floor. And that's something I hope to discuss with him.
And Sam Rosenberg, John's question, would you vote for the current Speaker of the House in the Illinois legislature?
Sure. I think John brought up some excellent points. First, with regards to the Speaker, I'm not sure if I would vote for him as Speaker of the House. I have not met the man, and I would have to have a conversation with him and see who else is running, of course. Just as one does not vote on a bill until they read it, one does not vote for someone until they've heard their positions. As for the structural situation that exists within Springfield and the amount of power that rests in the Speaker's office, John is exactly right. There is a significant amount of power that rests with Speaker Madigan. And as for where we go in the next 5-10 years, we need to be electing representatives who are able to work within the system that he has developed over the past 30 years, but are able to work so we are benefiting this district in particular. Restructuring the bylaws, the rules of procedure, the, you know, in some instances, even the Illinois Constitution, as for how the state legislature works, would be a very intensive and very, I don't want to say politically risky, but politically, it would take someone really sticking their neck out and making sure that every single ally and every single proposal is worthwhile. Additionally, you'd be running up to some stiff opposition because there are individuals who have made careers of being in Springfield and taking advantage of their knowledge of those rules. That's one of the reasons I'm in favor of term limits. That's one of the reasons that I believe we should be representing and voting for individuals who stand up for what is important for their district. Since day one, I have stated my opposition to Senate Bill 1, the pension reform bill. I've stated my position favoring the progressive income tax. Additionally, I have stated that I am against the proliferation of charter schools, all things that Speaker Madigan is against. But if I am to go to Springfield, working within his mechanism, at least for the first few periods where I am still a junior representative is going to be necessary, because no freshman legislator is going to be able to go to Springfield and rewrite the Constitution. I'll never forget one of my first weeks in law school, our professor stood up and said most kids go to law school thinking they're going to rewrite the Constitution, and they end up handling mechanics liens. So the change is drastic, but it is something that I believe we can do over time so that we do have more transparency and better representation in the State House.
All right, let me get to one more call in here. Let's go to line two, Paul in Champaign County. Paul, thanks for calling in. You're on Focus.
Hi, I'll try to be brief. Well, I wanted to ask about taxes, and we have this increase that's going to go away, and I really think that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors around taxes in this state. Ralph Mottere of the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities cuts through it. But if you look at the surrounding states, Illinois has a very low personal income tax. Indiana is put as its counterpose at lower, but it actually they actually have a county level income tax that averages like 1.43%. So it actually brings Indiana's state income tax to 0.7% below the 5% that we currently have. So we are not a low tax state. If we let that surtax go away, which would could contribute to half of the structural deficit that we have in this state, we would be below Indiana in our personal income tax. Now, I think there should be ways of making it fairer and progressive. Income tax is a great idea. I'm glad you're both on that. But can you talk about what you would actually propose? Now, we have Madigan talking about cutting corporate taxes in half, and that's even more smoke and mirrors because we have this replacement tax that fits in the picture as well that I haven't actually sorted out. But Illinois is not a high-tax state, and we have many, many needs that could be addressed if a fair tax.
So your question is what they support how they, in terms
how
of...
How would they feel about that? Well, specifically, the first one is how do they feel about the extension of this tax, which, again, like puts us very close to where Indiana is.
Okay.
And the other states around us are much higher.
Okay. I believe this one goes to Sam. And the question today, would you support... So the income tax hike is set to expire January of next year. Do you support extending that?
And I think with the situation, I liked the term that I think was Paul that used, the smoke and mirrors. For example, with regards to the corporate tax, as it currently stands, corporations throughout Illinois are not treated the same for tax purposes. If a large corporation wants to get beneficial tax treatment, they need to go through a whole process of committees in Springfield, including the House Finance Committee, to ask for such beneficial treatment, to ask for such I don't want to say handouts, ask for such incentives, and then only once they meet certain standards do they get that treatment, and frequently they don't even jump through the first hoop because of how laborious it is. I can imagine that if it's difficult for large corporations to do that, it's even more difficult and probably impossible for small corporations to do it, and small corporations end up taking the brunt of that. As for the tax... The temporary income tax, promises were made by many members of the Democratic caucus to let that expire. As for it being extended, I'm not sure how I would vote on that because it is part of a larger situation where we're going to need more extensive tax reform. As Paul noted, there is a structural deficit problem in Illinois that is not only impacting us in the short term, but is preventing us from having the ability to vote or the ability to commit the correct amount of money for education and necessary social services. For example, Illinois ranks dead last out of 50 states when it comes to the portion of public education funding covered on the state level. If we are able to change the way that the tax structure, whether it be corporate, whether it be a progressive income tax, is implemented, it will really alter things. Hopefully, it makes the conversation about the temporary tax increase moot and that we are moving forward with a much more simplistic, less smoke and mirrors tax code in Illinois that not only people can understand, but that is fair and is able to bring in the necessary revenue for our social services. This is not just a matter of paying our bills on time, because that is a major issue as well, but it's also a matter of social justice, because those who are currently being subjected to low rates of payment, whether it be their wages, whether it be their salary, are or even their pensions are being taxed at a higher rate in terms of their the flat tax and are having to pay a larger percentage of their income than those who make a significant amount more money.
All right, and let me also say thank you to Paul for calling in. And Carol Ammon, same question. Do you support the income tax increase, extending that?
I support the extension of the income tax. I don't believe that it is responsible for Illinois, who's currently in a whirlwind of debt. As illustrated, we're dead last in funding education. So what does that funding look like when we allow the current rate to expire? What happens then? Not only am I for its permanency or temporary permanency until we establish a progressive income tax, I'm totally against the corporate tax cut. All of those things take away revenue from education. And there is no way for us to justify allowing it to expire with hopes that we'll be able to make it up and pay our debts by some other means. Unfortunately, when they, the legislators, voted on that temporary tax, they should have looked a little more long term, because they knew that at some point you would be in trouble with your pensions. They knew that education funding was already well below where it should be. And so to put a temporary tax on the table and then take it away with growing debt, I think it would be absolutely irresponsible for any legislator to do that at this time in the state.
All right. Thank you. Carol Ammons and Sam Rosenberg. We're talking with the Democratic candidates in the race for the 103rd State Legislative District. We'll talk more with both of them in a moment, hear a bit more about them and their goals here in this campaign as well. If you have a question for the candidates, give us a call. The number is 800-222-9455. You can also drop us an email. That address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Stay with us. It's Focus on WILL. And welcome back. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Scott Cameron. Early voting for the Illinois primary election got started yesterday. To vote this week in Champaign County, you just head over to the county clerk's office. That's in the Birken Center in Urbana. Starting then on March 11th, and this is for the first time, you can also vote early at seven other sites across the county. There's a full list of those locations on the county clerk's website. Election day officially is on March 18th. That's 2 weeks from today. With many voters still undecided, we're talking with the Democratic candidates for the 103rd State Legislative District. The 103rd covers almost all of Champaign and Urbana. Last week, we talked with Republican Kristen Williamson. If you missed that conversation, you can listen to that anytime on our website. Just head over to will.illinois.edu. Let's come back. Let's talk a little bit about the two of you. And this next question here is going to go to Carol Ammons. You're running for a public office. You've been out there talking about a lot of the issues. What do you want voters to know about you as a person?
I want voters to know that I am an experienced local legislator. I'm a mother. I'm also a community servant and have been working for the last 13 years, six of them being in public office, to improve the community for which I live. I've struggled, like so many other people in my community have struggled. But I'm a person who understands how to get things done because I've done them. Over the last several years on the county board, I've approved hundreds of millions of dollars in projects for workers in our community. I've protected our unions. I'm not just talking about something that I may do. I'm talking about things that I'm doing. And I'm a legislator that will go and do. Yes, it's difficult to go into a new environment where there is a flow already in place. But I bring to the table a new idea, a new energy, and a willingness to work with people that I have had to work with over very difficult topics in the past. That's what I want them to know. I'm not afraid. I'm very confident in my ability to come in and help to move the discussion forward, because that's what I've been doing.
All right. And Sam Rosenberg, same question. What do you want folks to know about you?
Scott, I want to add one more thing. You mentioned the early voting. Actually, this year we have a new law, which is also very exciting because if you are 18 at the time of the general election, you can vote primary if you are only 17 at the time of the primary. So hopefully more and more young people will be getting out to vote and getting involved with a lifelong habit of voting in primaries and general elections.
That's right. So if you're going to be 18 by the time November rolls along, you can vote in the primary, and that's the first time that's happening.
Yes, correct.
As well.
Correct.
Okay.
And getting back to that question you mentioned, I stayed in this community after coming to school here because I fell in love with it. I want to see this community prosper. I bring education, experience, commitment, energy, and a willingness to work with others who may not have the same perspective as I do on a variety of issues. As I mentioned earlier, I run very opposite of many politicians on a variety of issues. There is nothing in the 103rd District or working here, whether it be as a legislator, whether it be as an attorney, whether it be as a public servant, a policeman, fireman, that can really prepare someone for going to Springfield. It is a beast unto itself. And that said, I work hard. I'm a quick learner. And those who do know Springfield have been impressed by what I am doing in this community. Clearly, these individuals believe that I can hit the ground running as someone who can represent this district, 103rd, the concerns, the issues that are important to Champaign-Urbana at the Capitol. In my mind, being a state representative is not just about going to a city and writing documents and voting on those documents, but it's about being an ambassador for the causes that are important to your community, whether that be sitting in a community meeting until 11 o'clock midnight discussing what pension reform means to public servants, what it means to union members, and or whether it means going to cities across the United States to recruit business to come to Champaign-Urbana and to stand up and tell the world how great of a community we have here in East Central Illinois. And that's something that I think really impacts my ability to be a successful elected official. It's not just about going to Springfield. It's not just about where you've been. It's about your vision for the community, and it's about what you're going to do and how respectful you're going to be of others' opinions.
Can I respond to something he just said? It's really important. I really appreciate him highlighting something for me. I believe that there are things that can prepare you to go to Springfield. There are things that prepare you to be on the city council, to be on the county board. Both of my predecessors, both of whom I've had to work with, both of them came through the same way that I'm coming right now, through local government, through the county board, and through those community organizations for which many of I've also worked. I believe those things absolutely do prepare you, not somebody's opinion on what you could do because they think you're great, but what you actually have done. I've sat in meetings until 11 p.m. talking about community issues. I've organized in this community for people to have food at Douglas Library. I've cooked it myself. So I'm not speaking about some hypothetical. I'm actually speaking about the description that my wonderful opponent just described is actually describing the things that I've done, not what people have said. And I further have worked with Republicans, Independents, Greens, people of no party affiliation, no religious affiliation, and many religions on issues that affect people here locally. That's what I've been doing for the last 13 years. And I have a long list of things I could name, but it is important for people to know there is a process by which you become prepared for things that you do. I don't expect to walk into court and pretend, although I read law books, that I'm a lawyer. I can't do that. I'm not prepared to do that. I have to do something to earn that respect and that title, and I believe I've done that.
So it's been interesting, this campaign, because there have been, if you read between the lines, you know, various people talking and various sides of the campaigns here, I hear you talking about and getting very clearly at, you know, the issue of experience, and that comes out in many ways. I hear a number of other things talking about, you know, on Sam Rosenberg's side, the idea of electability and things like that. Sam, how do you respond? I mean, how does that playing out right now in this campaign?
To what?
Right now we hear this issue of experience coming up, and you've addressed that a number of times. From your side, often we hear the issue of, electability. Who's a person who can win, particularly in November? being raised. And these are, again, perceptions and arguments that are playing out as his campaign proceeds. Why don't I give you a chance first to respond to that question of experience that's being raised?
Yeah, and, you know, this is one of the reasons I'm spending almost all of my time going door-to-door so that I can talk to people face-to-face and address any concerns that they may have about my experience and about my knowledge of this community and the knowledge of the issues that are important to this community. As I previously said, Springfield is a unique beast, and those who have been there, whether it be Representative Jacobson, whether it be Mayor Prussing, formerly a state representative, have gotten behind me, and they understand what it takes to represent this area in Springfield, and they believe that I'll be able to do that justice and carry their banner for progressive causes for the next 5-10 years.
All right, this brings me to there was a quote in the paper not too long ago. As former Urbana City Council member Esther Pat, who, to give full context, has come out as a supporter of Carol Ammons, she described this race as being, quote, nasty. Tom Kasich, in that same article in the News Gazette, described the race as having, quote, the potential to become a civil war with the Democratic Party. My question is, has this race gotten nasty? And Sam, this one comes to you first.
I don't believe so. I think we are discussing the issues, and individuals are able to state their opinions as to whether or not the papers cover that, whether or not that gets broadcasted. That's up to different media outlets. As I've said since day one, my top priorities in this campaign are bringing jobs and improving the education of this community, jobs and education, jobs and education, jobs and education. And I really have no interest in discussing anything else besides, I mean, the main issues that are important to the 103rd District. As for its nasty level at being a civil war, I think we're having a vibrant discussion about the issues and the strengths of the different candidates, and I like to see it continue.
All right, and Carol Ammons, same question. Do you think this race has gotten nasty?
Well, certainly I'm a nonviolent participant in the war. I'm not casting aspersions on my opponent. Unfortunately, my opponent and his campaign has done this nasty war against me, not about the issues, but about me personally. And there's been much research about how to disparage a candidate who may not be the typical candidate. And we've seen that in the Obama election in 2008. But that doesn't bother me. What I see happening is, again, I am weatherproof. It's very cold outside, but the cold doesn't bother me. I've been through a lot of issues in my life, and those lessons have prepared me for the nastiness of this primary and the nastiness of the general. I'm prepared for that. When you deal with the term of electability, that is a perceptive term. So people look at that and say, well, they don't meet my standard, and therefore they're not electable. But the people of the 103rd may not agree. And so we'll find out on March 18th whether they agree or not. At the end of the day, my goal is to make sure that we have independent, trusted, and experienced leadership that comes out of the 103rd District. People have trusted me to serve. They've looked at my mistakes, and they said, no, I trust her to serve. She's been serving for 6 years, and she served honorably. And that's important to me. And so regardless to what mudslinging or negative connotations that are sent from either opponent in this race, it will not take me off of the issues. And I've been quite focused regardless to what's happening on the other side.
And I do want to follow up just briefly. Obviously, there's been a lot of things that have come up and gone on in the campaign. And you talk about, you know, coming that you have not, I can't remember the specific word.
I'm nonviolent.
There you go.
I'm a nonviolent soldier.
You know, to that end, I mean, I wonder, there is, you know, during some of the debates and some of the forums, I have heard you make comments about, you know, whether it be questions about where some money is coming from into the campaign and things like that. I mean, I'm not sure anybody really is above the fray in this particular campaign.
Well, I think one of the things that I really stand for is campaign finance reform. When we look at elections, it is important. I'm a regular person who has voted since I turned 18. It's important for me to make sure that people who are running for elected seats, that they don't buy those seats through misleading advertising and ads because they have tons of money. Campaign finance reform is one way for regular people like myself to be able to serve their community without the big money and the big donors. That's what I stand for. And I think that that's important for people in the 103rd District. And it is important to people in Illinois that there be a real look at how we are financing and electing officials for our state.
And I guess my question was more along, is it fair to say that that you are nonviolent in this campaign if you are also engaging in some?
Well, I'm certainly not engaging in personal attacks.
That's where you see the difference.
That's the difference. Personal attacks are not a part of my platform whatsoever, hasn't been and won't be. My experience is what I'm really working on, and I believe I'm the best candidate for this position based on my experience and my service, and that's where I've been focused at.
Okay. All right. And Sam, do you have a follow-up to that?
I have no interest in discussing any type of personal attributes of either my opponent or even myself and the falsehoods. I want to discuss the issues that are important to this district.
And do you feel that's been happening in the campaign?
Yes, I do.
With all of this going on, we just heard, Carolyn, your thoughts and how this has played out. At the end of the day, there's going to be, you wake up on March 19th or whatever, maybe in the evening of March 18th, there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser in this campaign.
Sure.
At the end of the day, you're both representing the Democratic Party, and there's what would likely be a competitive election coming up in November. After this race, will you be able to, and how will you be able to respect your opponent at the end of the day and support him or her in what will likely be a competitive general election? And I think my notes here, I think, Carol, this one comes to you. Is that right?
Okay. Yes, it is. Certainly, I've been working in the community with people who don't agree with me for a number of years. And I continue to work with the people in the community who may not agree with me. I think at the end of the day, both of us are Democrats. And unfortunately, I didn't get to meet Mr. Rosenberg before this election and would have liked to have worked with him to really line up some of the projects that I've been working on. But hopefully at the end, regardless to which of us moves forward to the general election, that we will continue to work together because I'll continue to work in my community one way or the other. And so I think we'll be the Democrats have pulled it together. And we've done it before and we'll do it again. And we'll be prepared for the November election, however the outcome is on March 18th.
And Sam Rosenberg?
And this issue does come up frequently at the doors that I knock on throughout the day. 95% of the issues my opponent and I agree on 100% together. To mix statistical analysis. But when it comes to moving on to the general election, I think it was the Champaign County Young Democrats who in their questionnaire asked if you would be willing to support whomever comes out of the primary. And my answer was a simple one-word answer, yes, because at the end of the day, we are Democrats. And at the end of the day, we do agree on 95% of the same things. And while we may have spats throughout this campaign, while we may disagree on how to get certain things done, we are Democrats and we are going to come together once this primary is over.
All right. What is, and this one's going to start with Sam Rosenberg, what is one, I guess let's say one given the time we have here, what is the one issue that you see as the most important need or most important issue facing this community right now?
Job creation. And that means not only job creation in support for the university so that they continue to hire and that they continue to promote good-paying jobs throughout its structure, but also it means expanding into communities that have not seen job creation in some time. And that's one of the fantastic things about Champaign-Urbana is that it is very diverse in its economic base, from the service industry to the university to the blue-collar facilities that exist in Champaign-Urbana. If we are able to increase the percentage of our population that is employed in good-paying jobs, we will be able to solve many of our problems. The tax base will increase. The crime rate will go down. That is something that is exciting to me because I do believe all of that is possible here in Champaign-Urbana. I do believe that whether it be through my support with the AFL-CIO, that we can bring good manufacturing here to Champaign-Urbana, that with my support, even on campus, that we are able to bring more individuals into the university to continue really developing the fantastic academic community we have. And what even gets me more sort of, excited about all of this is that we can really be an economic engine for the rest of the state of Illinois. And that is something that we can really be the turning point and part of this Illinois renaissance so that the state is finally getting the revenue it needs for its social services, that our employment rate continues to drop, and Champaign-Urbana can be the focal point of that if we are able to get that job creation going here in Champaign.
All right. And Carol Lamon, same question. The one biggest need or issue that you see in the community right now?
I think job creation is the biggest. Right now we have double-digit unemployment in Champaign County. I mentioned earlier that our poverty rate is third in counties throughout Illinois, 25%. 25% of our people here that are working below the poverty level. So in that job creation, for me, it is important to create jobs, but it is certainly more important that those jobs create living wages for those people who are under and below the poverty line. We want to make sure that we create innovative jobs, that we're smart in the jobs that we bring to our economy. We don't want job creation that puts a Clinton landfill on top of the Muhammad Aquifer and destroy the water. We want job creation that is responsible to an environment and responsible to our community and meets the needs of the people who live here. In many cases, we do bring jobs to the area, but some of those jobs are not necessarily for the people who live in the area. Having 17% unemployment among African Americans in Champaign County, we have to open up the doors of inclusion. That's something that I'm going to continue to work on, working with jobs, working with the unions. And I'll just say this in closing. In the last several years, I was just benefited greatly by serving on the county board. You know, in that time, I was able to vote on $549,000 in grants and for small businesses in Champaign County. It was important for us to do that because small businesses also create 2 and 3 full-time jobs, and many of them help us in our local economy. And so I'll be looking at the larger, but also the small business creation as well.
All right. Carol Ammons and Sam Rosenberg, the Democratic candidates in the race for the 103rd House seat in Springfield, a district that covers almost all of both Champaign and Urbana. They both joined us in Studio C. Thank you both for coming in. Nice conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for having us, and I really appreciate it.
Could have gone another hour here, I think. Focus was produced today by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Ryan Weber is our intern. I'm Scott Cameron, sitting in today for Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.